This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Farrah.com. A lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Tom, do me one favor and push that button.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
Tourists come to Seattle and they're told to check out the troll under the Fremont Bridge. Have you ever done that as a local?
No, I've seen pictures
of it. Yeah, it seems stupid. I don't quite understand why people are interested in it. But I suppose you go and show up, you take a selfie with the troll in the background, you post it on Instagram, and you go on your merry way.
It's not a real troll, just so everyone knows.
No, it's not.
Right. Just clearing that up.
No, I know. Mike O'Brien is not hanging out under the Fremont Bridge.
He
just represents the area. This is like a sculpture of a massive troll. Well, that area has been basically taken over by a homeless encampment, and it's been like this for the last 2 years. So finally, the city decided to clear it out via the navigation team. That is the team that is a group of social workers and officers who interact with the homeless and clear them out or offer them services. They can say, hey, take up services, or we're just going to clean you out. We're going to move you all around. They're not going to make arrests. That's how they're different than some of the other cities in the state in dealing with this. And they made 18 visits to this encampment leading up to this cleanup, according to Como News. They made 114 contacts with individuals. They connected 12 of them into actual shelter. But not everyone who was offered shelter decided to take them up on the offer. Como's Matt Markovich talks to a couple who's decided to say no to the housing.
You're not going
to
accept the shelter part?
Well, maybe eventually, but not right now. Like, within the last month, we've been moved like 3 or 4 times now. I mean, I got PTSD for obvious reasons, stuff like that. Like, I'm not sleeping separate from him.
And they won't let you sleep together at the shelter.
Okay, then you're out of luck here. I mean, I should take that back. You're not out of luck in Seattle. You're just out of luck in this very moment. Because the truth is, once you clean up some of these spaces, the people return within sometimes hours. We did that story in Northgate on the off-ramp, or the on-ramp to 5 South. And it was filled with a whole bunch of... You went down there. It was a bad encampment.
I did.
And it's back to where it is after they cleared it
up. A lot of needles.
Yeah. That's what happens. So this is yet another part of Seattle that's been given over to the homeless to decide what they're going to do with it. And, of course, this is, in some cases, the first impression that a lot of people get when they're visiting Seattle. Do you think they're coming back? Do you think that family from Phoenix that got attacked by a homeless dude, someone putting a noose around one of their necks, do you think they're going to come back to Seattle after that experience at the Seattle Center? Do you think a family that's in town from Dallas going to the Fremont Troll and realizing that it's been overtaken by a bunch of homeless people, then going downtown, seeing all the homelessness there, all the trash there, then going up to Capitol Hill and seeing what's happened there, taking a nice big sniff of urine, which is what most of Capitol Hill now smells like on Broadway. Do you think they're coming back? No. Haley Bender with Friends of the Troll is disappointed that the city isn't doing anything to try, at least, to deter the homelessness takeover.
It's unfortunate, I would say, that it's taking a citizens group to help bridge all the different departments within the city to make change happen.
It's because they don't care. I mean, we can lie and say that their hearts are in the right place and they've got a plan that they're working. They don't. I really am starting to believe that a lot of these people are purposefully keeping homeless folks out on the streets, because then people like Shama Sawan or Mike O'Brien or Lorena Gonzalez can complain about the injustices in the city. They can complain about how Amazon is ruining the city, creating a position where you can't afford to live, so now you're living out on the streets. I think they want people out on the streets because then they can pretend that they're the heroes coming to save us all. The thing is, they're not coming to save anybody. And hopefully they won't be able to survive politically any longer in this city after this next election, but we'll find out. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So Politico reports the Supreme Court ruled that the federal government can, in fact, detain immigrants indefinitely for past crimes, even if they've been previously released. Now, this is a huge win for the Trump administration, which is why you're not going to hear it get talked about too much on CNN or MSNBC. And for those of you who have been on the fence a little bit about President Trump, as I'm not going to lie, I have been as well. I don't necessarily like a lot of the rhetoric or how he talks or how he tweets. But the one thing that I love is he puts a lot of good judges in positions of power, including two of the five justices on the court that decided to side with him on this. Now, to me, the issue is pretty clear. It's pretty clear. Immigrants here under green cards sometimes commit crimes that could subject them to deportation. Now, because of their status, they can be immediately detained without a bond hearing by the federal government after they're released from jail on that local level for whatever crime it is that they committed. Now, immigrants in this case argued if they're not detained the same day that they're released, they're owed a bond hearing by the government. They can't be held indefinitely. The Trump administration said, no, we absolutely can detain you. We're not going to always be able to detain you the same day that you're released. And we'll do it at our discretion, but we'll do it as consistently as possible. And the Supreme Court, 5-4, agreed with the Trump administration. Now, this all started this case because of a plaintiff, Moni Prape. She was a green card holder whose family fled Cambodia. I feel really bad for what their family had to go through. I said she, it's a he, my apologies. He served a short sentence, according to Politico, for simple battery in 2013 and was detained without a bond hearing, allegedly based on two marijuana convictions 7 years earlier. At that point, I no longer have sympathy for you. I support the legalization of marijuana, but you know what I also support? Following the law. And if you're already here, either illegally or as a green card holder, understand you need to be incredibly careful about following our own laws. We've got laws here. You are a guest. When you're here illegally, you are an unwanted guest in most communities, not all, like Seattle. I don't feel the need to deport everybody who's here illegally. That's my position. I support the DACA program, for example. But if you're already breaking the law to get here, it would behoove you to actually, you know, not commit acts of battery. Not do drugs illegally. Don't sell drugs illegally. Don't beat people up. Don't skip out on paying your rent. Like, there's a whole host of things that you probably should not do if you're already here on a conditional basis. That condition being, you don't break any more laws. I don't find that to be particularly controversial. But hey, that's me. That's just this one conservative's take. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
So over the news, Reuters broke the story that Beto O'Rourke was a member of a famous group of hackers a couple decades ago. Only they broke the news after sitting on that news for over a year so they can help him beat Ted Cruz in that last Senate election in Texas. So these were bad hackers. These were hackers who stole credit card numbers. They used it to pay for long-distance telephone service. They violated copyright laws and hacked into computers. These were not benevolent hackers. And the reporter, Joseph Menn, sat on this story since 2017, and he only got the story confirmed if he agreed not to write about it until after the Senate campaign. They held on to this information because they thought it could potentially hurt Beto O'Rourke. They're using this lie, and Brian Stelter of CNN, the most dishonest media critic out there, he's defending this move because he goes, you know, some reporters purposely will sit on certain information if they're writing a book, and in this case, Joseph Menn is writing a book that doesn't come out until June. So why did he release it this past weekend? Why didn't it wait until June, or at least closer to the book? They purposely held on to it. They held on to it because the media doesn't like Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is emblematic of everything about the conservative movement that these haters on CNN and on MSNBC and in the New York Times and in Reuters absolutely loathe and fear. And so they held this back because they wanted to help Beto O'Rourke. They loved Beto O'Rourke. Remember that whole controversy about Fox News spiking a Stormy Daniels story about Trump? And part of the reason why they did it was they actually couldn't prove it. It was flimsy reporting at the time, so they killed it. But the left made a whole big deal about that. Here they're silent. Here they're making excuses. Here they're saying, oh, well, okay. I mean, fair point, but you here's what really this is about. Got it.
Jason. Robert.
Oh, Robert. Robert. Or, but it's not Beto?
It's not Beto.
He's not Latino?
Beto? I don't know what it is. His name's Robert.
Robert Francis O'Rourke. Got it. You're listening to the Jason Rance Show. He's so woke, he goes by a name. I mean, the whole idea of cultural appropriation apparently goes out the window when you're pretending to have a name that makes you appear Latino when you're not.
It would make more sense if they called him Bob. It should be Bob.
Let's just call him Boar. Beto O'Rourke, Boar, he's a Boar. Which, by the way, he's been going in New Hampshire and Iowa, and he's been campaigning. He's going to a lot of diners. He keeps stepping on tables where people eat and counters. It's driving me nuts. It's actually driving me nuts. Did she say a tent fire?
She sure did.
Yeah. We don't have a recycling problem. We don't have a homelessness problem. We do have a recycling problem in Tacoma, which we'll get to in a bit. But first, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So the upzoning measure known as Mandatory Housing Affordability, MHA, it was officially passed by the Seattle City Council yesterday. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. It enacts requirements for building affordable housing and taller residence buildings in certain neighborhoods throughout Seattle. The goal, they say, is to provide at least 6,000 new rent and income-restricted homes for people who are low income. And it was being pushed as a social justice cause by people like Lorena Gonzalez, pretending the woke city of Seattle is somehow racist and exclusionary. And then you've got white city council member Rob Johnson saying approving upzones means we're embracing inclusion.
Because a housing-rich city is a city that welcomes multifamily housing, not a city that's wary of it. A housing-rich city is a city that shares its neighborhoods, not a city that sequesters its neighborhoods.
Yeah, okay, we're not sequestering anybody. This is a total scam.
I think density is a good thing for cities and metropolitan regions, both for affordability and for sustainability.
It is a scam because it levies substantial fines on developers who do not dedicate between 5 and 11% of projects to low-income housing. So if you're a developer, you can simply pay a fine that says, you know what, we're not going to follow through with this because, you know what, we will pay this fine. At the end of the day, it's much better business for us to build a traditional apartment complex, charge what we would like, and not have to worry about low-income residents who pose a potential problem as it relates to whether or not they're going to be able to pay our rent on time in a consistent manner. It's just too much of a hassle. We're just going to pay the fine. The city of Seattle knows this. The city of Seattle could have just said, we're going to allow people to build up higher. What happens when you build more housing units where the demand is not only being met, but it's being exceeded? The prices automatically go down. So all they have to do is say, we're going to allow you to build more. You build more. The rent already will come down as a result of that. So you would have gotten your affordable housing by simply allowing people to build up. They chose instead to charge them on top of that all. That's why this is a scam. It's a total scam. It's been a scam from the beginning. It's been a scam because they know that people like to demonize Amazon and other big businesses, blaming them for the problems related to housing, which we don't actually have. Not in a meaningful way. Simply saying some people can't afford to live in some portions of Seattle does not mean we have this huge problem. And yet we're going to lean into this idea that that's what we have. We're going to lean into this idea that people can't afford to live here in droves and they're all living out on the streets as a result. That is an absurd position. That's an absurd position. And I'm not going to just sit back and let them push this kind of nonsense. Because that's exactly what it is. It's total nonsense. It's a money grab. That's what they're about. They're about taking other people's money, spending it the way that they feel is efficient. All of us look at it and say, that's not going to work. Why don't you just let them build more apartment complexes? Whatever. 1-800-465-8770. It's the number to tax resolution hotline.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rance Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. It's 4:30. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means we get to do something called the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The concept of the big local is really, really easy. It's really simple. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, and so we take this time out of our day to talk about the communities you actually live in, the communities that you care about most, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. And we start with an article on the Tacoma News Tribune website riddled with ads telling me to buy stuff. An article written by columnist Matt Driscoll, who is kind of shaming people for their consumption. It's a column around the issue of recycling in Tacoma, where it's become incredibly expensive because, like most cities, what they do with their recycling is they ship all their stuff over to Asia. China decided to change their policies. They got way more strict in the trash and recycling that they would accept. Which means you either have to pay more to deal with the recyclables or you kind of give up on it completely. And in Tacoma, they're trying to figure out if they're just going to get rid of recycling curbside. Maybe they'll charge you more for the services they currently offer, between $1 and $4. So not a ton, but more than what you're currently paying. And in this, seems to me an opportunity to talk about what Jay Inslee talks about a lot. The green economy, creating green jobs. You would think that you would take news like this, because it's not just happening in Tacoma, it's happening all across the country, to say, okay, it's way more expensive and inefficient to ship off our trash to Asia. Why don't we create more plants in the United States that would then create green jobs to handle the recycling? But instead of having that conversation, because maybe, I don't know, that's a little bit too complex, Driscoll uses it as an opportunity to complain about how much we consume. He wrote in part, put simply, we've got a serious consumption problem. And the state of recycling in Tacoma and across the country should serve as a wake-up call. Are you awake? It's a wake-up call.
What? Huh?
On a personal level, people need to be more aware of how much waste they're producing and take steps to curb it. I love irony like this. Because let's be clear about something. The Tacoma News Tribune, while not the paper it once was, they print their paper, by the way, out of town. It gets shipped up from, I believe, Vancouver now, or maybe Olympia, to Tacoma to get put out. It's full of ads, both in print and online, asking you to buy a whole bunch of stuff you don't actually need. And in the same article, complaining about your consumption, I find it odd that I got hit up online buying a whole bunch of garbage due to ads that I was being targeted with. That's number one. Number two, why don't you decide to practice what you preach? Get rid of the newspaper completely. The industry is already going in the direction of getting rid of print newspaper and focusing instead on online content. Why don't you just do that now voluntarily before you're forced into it and cut down on all the trash, all the litter that you contribute to in the state of Washington? I don't do any of my reading off of newspapers, and yet I get all the content from the Tacoma News Tribune and the Everett Herald and the Marysville Globe and the Kirkland Reporter, all those things online. You don't need to be in print anymore, so why don't you practice what you preach? Number two, I love how they tell us all how we're supposed to live our lives. And they usually do it with this level of snoot to indicate, well, I am more conscious about how I purchase things. I use a reusable plastic or a reusable bag to get rid of plastic. I use a reusable metal canister for my water. I'm so much better than you. Why don't you start living like me? And by the way, if you're not, we're just going to ban the stuff you use, because I don't want you using it. That level of snoot just kind of rubs me the wrong way. Why don't you stop telling me how to live my life and focus on your own life? Because right now, you're not practicing what you preach, coming from a newspaper that's contributing to the suffering of this environment. Is that too harsh? Is that a little bit too harsh? Because I feel like if you're going to tell me to watch my consumption, stop telling me to buy stuff. Because you want me buying your stupid newspaper, you want me buying your stupid column, you want me buying a whole bunch of stuff that you're promoting on your website. I can do that, which would contribute to the problem you're calling me out on, or you could stop taking that kind of blood money.
I had a very similar conversation with my mom when I was 12.
Just let me live my life. Come on.
Really, man? You're comparing me to a 12-year-old. You're not really comparing you to your parents. You're comparing me to a 12-year-old. That was your first mistake. Number two, you made eye contact with him, and I told you not to make eye contact with him. You're beneath me, and it makes me feel uncomfortable.
Sometimes someone stands up to you.
The Washington Department of Transportation, WashDOT, they're finalizing plans to reduce congestion on I-5, specifically in Snohomish County, more specifically Marysville and Everett. They are supposed to see the bulk of the benefits, I suppose, of going after congestion. And these are two cities that are in desperate need of some help. For anyone who drives an I-5 north or southbound in those regions, you kind of know how bad it is. So they're going to focus on two projects. Number one is going to be a peak hour shoulder lane for traffic going northbound on I-5, similar to the ones they already have on I-405 around the Bothell area. So you'll be able to drive on the shoulders. I wish they would do this 24/7, but they're not going to. They're just going to focus it on peak hours. Okay, fine. I'll take it. Number two, they're building a new I-5 interchange, which would add another exit in and out of Marysville about a mile south of the main exit at 4th Street. So instead of focusing everyone to get off at this one exit, they build another exit not far away so people who don't necessarily need to get off of that exit but are forced into it can go down a little bit more, give some more space, because when that off-ramp backs up, it backs up onto I-5. This is wonderful. Can I ask a question that maybe is going to be controversial? I don't think it is, but here, can I do it? Here goes. Why aren't we doing this all across the state, this kind of move? I mean, should I not ask that question? Because this seems like we can probably do more of the shoulder driving elsewhere. Because I know a lot of folks who drive on I-5 near JBLM, where it's a disaster. I know a lot. Just try getting to Federal Way. It's a disaster. Can we get some shoulder driving elsewhere? It's safe, I'm told, or we wouldn't be doing it on 405, right? Or we wouldn't be doing it on I-5 here. Why don't we do more of this? And why is it that we're constantly told that you can't build your way out of traffic? That was the mantra coming from WashDOT, from their past WashDOT director. I forget her name. She was fired. She was fired by Republicans. It's actually kind of beautiful. But under Jay Inslee, they were saying, hey, you cannot build your way out of traffic. And I agree to a point, but you can build your way to mitigate traffic. You can absolutely create certain types of projects, build projects that make it a little bit easier. There are parts, for example, of if you're going from Bellevue into Kirkland, and maybe you made a mistake and you got on 405 by accident because it takes you kind of all over the place. You wanted to get off in downtown Bellevue. You ended up getting on 405 and you're headed towards Kirkland. There's not an exit for like 2 miles. It's a ridiculously long stretch without an exit. If we talked a little bit more about better strategic exits and on-ramps, couldn't we help mitigate some of the traffic problems? Just some. I'm not saying traffic goes away. I'm saying we might be able to lessen the feeling of just sadness and emptiness we feel while stuck in traffic. That's all I'm saying. Meanwhile, 56 million travelers will go through SeaTac Airport by 2027. None of them will have any place to plug in their cell phones, but we're going to ignore that, at least for now, because the Port of Seattle officials, they want to spend their time on other projects. It went before the Washington State Transportation Commission today and laid out several projects that they hope to accomplish over the course of the next decade or so. Plans include a new terminal with 19 gates and automated people movers with 3 stations to connect to the rental car facility. It includes a new terminal, a new main terminal. Commissioner Courtney Gregoire comments on the expansion of the International Rivals facility to our partner station, Cairo 7.
We're experiencing wait times right now that are just not acceptable, and we look forward to that expanded opportunity. Those increased gates mean the opportunity for more direct international connections.
I've not experienced this kind of wait time at SeaTac before, at least not regularly. Because the way that they talk about it, they're talking about like a wait time of 45 minutes plus, maybe an hour plus. I never get that. I wonder, where does that actually happen as often as they say? It definitely needs some kind of upgrade. I just wish the upgrade would be to make the experience a little bit more comfortable once you get past security. Because at some point, we all kind of understand that security is going to take long. Security is going to put us in a position where we end up having to spend a little bit longer than we would like to in line. But we say to ourselves, at least we justify to ourselves, okay, at least this is in the name of safety. How about once you get past the security measures, you have a place to sit? Is that too much to ask? Because there are portions, I generally fly when I'm flying domestic, Alaska or Delta. Alaska is the worst. There's just nowhere to sit. And I love Alaska Airlines, but there's literally nowhere to sit down because they don't have enough terminals. But then they have extra space for seats, which they don't put. And then, of course, you count for the, I almost said a bad word, the jerk who decides to put their bag on a seat rather than open it up for someone who's standing there.
Yeah, public service announcement. Don't do that.
Just stop that. And stop pretending, by the way. The lines would be much better if the people in them would stop acting like they've never flown in a plane before. Oh. Because this whole idea that you're still questioning whether or not you have to take off your belt or your shoes or a thick jacket or the laptop from your stupid backpack, I'm just done. You already know the answer. These are people who are lonely and in need of some kind of assurance that they're still alive and valued.
Yeah.
They're looking for conversation.
I also want more charging portals.
Okay, that's my next issue.
Oh, sorry.
And people who listen to me for a long time and have followed me over my several years in Seattle radio know that I get triggered by this topic. Because the fact of the matter is, you ask us to get to an airport 2 to 3 hours before our flight. We get there. Of course, when we show up really early, there's no line for security at all. So we get in. And then, ooh, lo and behold, we found a wonderful seat next to our Southwest Airlines flight, right in front of the gate. We're not going to be able to have the message drowned out over the PA at all, because we're standing right next. We're sitting right next to the woman who's making the announcement. Pull out your phone. You realize you've got 2 hours to kill. So you start maybe reading something on Kindle. Maybe you watch some videos on YouTube. Maybe you're listening to the Jason Rand Show podcast, which you can get over at ktth.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Maybe you play a little bit of a game and you realize, oh my God, it's only been 47 minutes. And then you look at your battery. And then the panic sets in. Because your flight to New York is about 6.5 hours. And you're not sure that you're going to be able to plug in your phone on that plane. Because in 2019, apparently, that's still not a certainty, which is ridiculous. And so then you look around for a place to plug in your phone because you're already at 62% battery. That's not going to last you the entire flight to New York. Then you can't find any spots to plug in. Then you see the one dude who's sitting down in the spot where you're not supposed to sit, out in the hallway, where it's supposed to be a fire lane, in case of an emergency. Dude sitting there because there happens to be an outlet that he's plugged into and he's taking total control over. So then the panic starts to set in even more. And then you wonder to yourself, should I stop for the next hour and a half, not listen to a podcast, not use my phone for fear that I'm going to be bored to tears on the plane? And then, you know what happens, Tom? You know what happens? Corner of your eye, you know what you see? You see one open seat next to the spot to plug in your phone. And you know what happens when you get there? You plug in your phone. You know what happens? Nothing, because it's broken. Because we can't fix these things in airports in 2019, specifically at SeaTac. I told you this triggers me. And now I'm going to have to take the next 4 minutes of the break to calm down. Thanks a lot, man.
Wow.
Just a jerk.
That's something.
I went on that journey, and now I'm angry. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. Don't forget, we are streaming on all those smart speakers out there. Have an Amazon Echo, just say, Alexa, play KTTH. Do the same for Google Home, and you'll be able to stream this show and this entire station wherever it is you are connected with your Amazon Echo or your Google Home. Devin Nunes, the Republican congressman and very big supporter of President Trump, he has decided he is going to sue Twitter, a few parody accounts, and he's asking for $250 million in damages coming forward. And he tells Sean Hannity on Fox News that Twitter was going against their own rules, he argues, to target him.
The case we're basically making is this was an orchestrated effort So people were targeting me. There were anonymous accounts that were developed. And look, there's not supposed to be. These accounts aren't supposed to exist. Twitter says that they don't have accounts that do this.
Yeah, Twitter does basically say that you have to be an actual person behind an account in order to exist on the site. But there are certainly parody accounts that real people create. I mean, there's a difference between bot accounts where it's programmed to target people versus if I were to come up with an account that said Devin Nunes smells. If I created that account, I'm still a human being who's doing it for a very specific purpose. But Devin Nunes says Twitter was actively targeting him and they promote fake news. And now he wants to push back to basically send a message.
Well, how is it that every day there's conservatives that are being banned? So, you know, look, they don't want to call it shadow banning. That's fine. They can call it whatever they want to call it. But the fact of the matter is people could not see my tweets. Okay. So now, but if you move forward, if you get emails from Twitter, it's constantly left-wing stuff. It's constantly fake news stuff. So I think if Twitter wants to be in the public square and they don't want to be a content developer, they should come clean, give us all your algorithms. How is it possible that I can be attacked relentlessly hundreds of times a day by fake accounts that they claim in their terms of service should not be there? So I guarantee you, if I put something out that was sexually explicit or attacked someone personally, they would stop it. They would say this is a sensitive tweet. They never did that to any of the people that were coming after me or other conservatives. So, and this is more than just conservatives. Every American should care about this if they care about the First Amendment.
So here's the deal. Because I care about the First Amendment, I hate this lawsuit. This is a horrible lawsuit. The government should not be coming in and telling a private company what they can or can't do. This whole idea that Devin Nunes gets targeted on Twitter and we're going to use that as an excuse to get a whole bunch of their algorithms that are supposed to be kept private, that gives them an advantage in the marketplace. We've got to put them forward. That's absurd. Now, I agree with him in spirit, right? I share his concerns about conservatives being targeted. There's no doubt about it that Twitter is actively pushing progressive points of view. I look on my Twitter feed, and what do I see when I look at the section of moments, like the big moments of the day? These are moments that aren't big stories at all, but they are all having to do with either pop culture or progressive talking points. The one right now, number one trend for me, according to Facebook, or according to Twitter, is Elizabeth Warren going after the Electoral College. Or Bernie Sanders hiring someone to help defend him against President Trump. I mean, that's not interesting to me at all. And yet somehow I'm being targeted, and I think they're doing that in a lot of ways. And when you look at what they actually choose to target you with, and when they highlight certain tweets, they clearly take a political stance. They clearly favor one side over the other. But as a consumer, I can choose to say, that's not right for me. Now, I choose to use Twitter because I can use it in a way that I find enjoyable for the most part, and I use it as a means to distribute some of the content on this show. It's very important for me. It's very important for me to put out stuff. And same for Saul Spady and Michael Medved and Ben Shapiro. They use Twitter to put out content. And if Twitter goes out of their way to silence our content, we can choose not to use it or try to get around it. Now, I hope what will come of this is at least an acknowledgement that this is what Twitter has been doing. But let's be clear. This is going to be shot down as a lawsuit. Here's Fox News legal analyst Judge Andrew Napolitano.
It's a novel litigation because we haven't seen anything like this before. Usually, when public officials sue because of what somebody said or didn't say about them, they lose. The theory being they have as big a megaphone as the person they claim has harmed them. And the First Amendment does not regulate Twitter. It's a private entity. So I don't know where it's going to go. He may be doing this just to make a statement, and he clearly is
and
making
is.
A statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And focusing a spotlight on Twitter's bias. Sometimes courts don't like to be used to make political statements, but we'll see where this goes.
They definitely don't generally like to be used in that way, unless, of course, they happen to be ideologues on either side of the aisle. Republicans do it just as much as Democrats do it when we're talking about certain judges who are activists. They don't like it. But I do like that we're talking about this issue in a more meaningful way. And we do end up putting pressure on companies like Twitter to get their act together to stop doing this. Because look, at the end of the day, they don't want the bad press. They don't want to actively lose conservative Twitter users, because that would just be opening a space for a competitor to be the conservative Twitter that conservatives would flock to. Donald Trump has done wonders for Twitter. And so it's in their best interest to not just fight this in court, because legally they should be on the winning side of this, but they should win this battle in the court of public opinion. And if the public actually believes that they are being silenced because of their political views, they're going to run away from Twitter. Twitter numbers are down, I believe, year over year. They have a problem. Twitter isn't making billions of dollars worth of profits. They would love to, but they're not. And so this kind of pressure, to be fair to Devin Nunes, is something that I can get behind. I like the pressure being put on them, because maybe it'll change their attitudes towards conservatives. Mike Huckabee is certainly a plan of this, telling Fox News,
"I'm so proud of the congressman. He's doing exactly what someone has needed to do for a long time, and that's holding social media companies' feet to the fire."
Why haven't you done it? I mean, you could have sued.
"They have been shadow banning conservatives. They've been making it very difficult for conservatives to get the message out. I've been at many times just obliterated by people have used all these kind of fake accounts trashing me. In any court of law, it should be defamation at the very least. And I'm extremely glad he's going after him. I hope he wins, and I hope it is the first of many lawsuits, because it doesn't look like Congress is going to do anything about it."
Understand, for those of you who cheer on this move, you may be like me and your heart supports it, but our brain should tell us no, because we're still conservatives and we don't want the government getting involved in regulating the private private sphere like this, especially when it has free speech implications. They get to do what it is they want to do, but we also have a lot of power, and we're choosing right now to either stick with Twitter or get rid of it. I'd love to hear from you. Send us a text, 1-800-465-8770. It's a none better tax resolution hotline. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.